Recently, we got a call from a man I'll just call Ramon. And he told me he had no insurance and that he needed help. Ramon said he'd spent most of his adulthood lost in addiction, but with the help of daily AA meetings and a great sponsor, he'd been sober for 9 months. I said, "Congratulations," and he said, "Thank you." He said, "But now I have no escape from the trauma of my childhood." He talked about flashbacks and panic when he was alone, and bouts of crying when he was at work. And he said, "It's not acceptable in his culture, especially for a man, to get mental health care." So he'd been trying everything he could think of to handle this on his own. But he shared, "I don't think I can keep myself alive much longer without help." And Ramon reminds me a bit of the hemorrhaging woman in today's gospel reading. We don't know for sure what her condition was, but many have speculated that it may have been menorrhagia. And menorrhagia can have different causes, but the result is uncontrolled menstrual bleeding. And it can be painful and is always incredibly disruptive to daily activities. If not addressed, it can also result in anemia. Talk to any woman who has experienced this, and we will tell you that it takes a heavy toll. In Jesus' time, it would have been even more disruptive for a woman's life because women were considered unclean during menstruation. So they had to stay out of public, and they had to be extremely careful to avoid touching others in their household. And for a woman having a normal cycle, this could mean a welcome rest, right? But for the woman in this story, it meant years of pain and isolation, 12 years of her life. Mark tells us that she had been mistreated by many doctors and had spent all that she had to find a cure. And I know there are those among us today who know this experience for various reasons. So I imagine this woman feeling physically weak from the anemia, probably pretty lonely, and maybe on some days even wondering if perhaps she was, in fact, less than because of her affliction. But she hears Jesus is in town and apparently has heard enough to think that maybe he could heal her. So she takes this huge risk. She breaks the rules of her community to jostle her exhausted, stigmatized body through the crowd to touch Jesus' cloak. And she is healed instantly. I'm guessing she hoped she could get away unnoticed. But Jesus calls out, "Who touched me?" he asks. And Mark tells us that she was trembling with fear when she came forward to admit that it was her. And I tried to do a little research to see if I could find out what the repercussions would have been for a woman for this taboo act. And I was unable to find that. But I'm sure it would not have been pleasant for her. And it doesn't matter in this woman's case because Jesus made sure she wasn't punished. In fact, he elevates her from her status as unclean to holy with this simple statement, "Your faith has saved you." And this is the same Jesus we follow today. The Jesus who meets us when we are in our worst shape. The Jesus who meets us when we are in our most marginalized identities and tells us that, in fact, we are clean and we are worthy of wholeness. Amen? And this courageous woman reminds me of many of the people who contact Spiritus Christi Mental Health Center. According to Mental Health America, the average time between the onset of a mental health problem and the time a person actually gets help is 11 years. In addition to the barrier of cost and finding a provider, people often say that they just didn't feel sick enough to warrant getting help. And this fits with what we hear from many of the people who call us. Like Ramon, they have tried everything they can to address the problem on their own. We've come a long way in reducing the stigma associated with mental health problems, but we still have a lot of work to do. Like Ramon, many folks risk disapproval from friends, family, even their faith communities, and they risk disappointment for seeking mental health care. But they call us anyway. They have just enough faith to believe that things can be different. Just enough faith to reach out. This morning after the 7:30 Mass, Pat Lane came up to me and told me that actually if you look at the word that was used for faith in this passage in the Greek translation, the word is actually closer to trust than it is to faith. And he rightly pointed out that this fits very well with what we ask of people at the mental health center. It takes a lot of trust. Trust that you'll be listened to. Trust that you actually will get some help. So they reach out because they have just enough trust. So I'll just give you a little background on the Mental Health Center for those of you who aren't aware. Our offices are over on the third floor at the main office building at Downtown Presbyterian and Spiritus Christi. And Eileen Hurley and Mark Potter and I are the three paid staff for the Mental Health Center. As director, I offer counseling to those who consult us, I support our volunteers, and I help those when they initially call to either get set up with someone through us or to connect to resources in the community. And Eileen is our clinical social worker, and she offers therapy and psychosocial supports to youth and adults, both on-site and out in the community. And our associate administrator, Mark, takes care of the fundraising. He's one of the main reasons that our walk is such a fun and successful event. And he takes care of administrative tasks to keep us running. And his welcoming and compassionate voice is often the first thing people hear when they call. And then, of course, the bulk of our work is actually done by a team of volunteer licensed professionals who provide individual, couples, and group psychotherapy to those who are uninsured or underinsured. And we have peer advocates who meet with people one-on-one, and then also every Wednesday afternoon in the Nielsen Room for our Living Room Peer Support Program. And then we also have yoga classes that are available both online and in person. And all this we can do free of charge. And I want to give a shout out to the other volunteers, many volunteers who volunteer as receptionists. They don't volunteer as attorneys. They are attorneys who volunteer. Consultants and everyone who helps out with our Riverwalk. All these people who show up to reduce stigma of mental illness and to provide access for care for people who need it. So your support for the Mental Health Center helps people in many more ways than I can possibly list here today. So I just picked out a couple little vignettes to share with you so you'll get a feel for how what you offer in terms of your investment, how it helps people. And I've changed their names and I've changed some other identifying details to protect their privacy. So the first person I want to tell you about is a young man I'll call Jack, who called us last spring for help with controlling his anger. He and his partner had recently had a fight that was so loud and intense that the police had been called to their apartment. And because of that incident, a social worker encouraged Jack to reach out to us. Through his work with us, he has been able to get a diagnosis and to get access to medication to help with symptoms. And that's helped him to be able to start learning better ways to manage and understand his anger. And I think probably even more importantly, Jack is coming to understand that his needs and feelings are just as legitimate as his partner's needs and feelings. And he's learning how to communicate those needs and feelings better. And I just need to get a drink of water here. And then I want to tell you about Charisse, who called about a year ago because of increased anxiety and panic that she was experiencing. Her wedding was approaching, and that was stirring up pain related to the neglect and abuse she experienced in her family growing up. Charisse had avoided getting help because, as a lesbian and a woman of color, she knew well the risk she would be taking in seeking mental health care. She knew she would be vulnerable to microaggressions and possible misdiagnoses and just disrespect that can result from implicit bias that just resides in us as practitioners and definitely is infects systems of care. But she said she'd heard good things about us, and she had enough trust, just enough trust, to think that maybe we were a safe place for her. So we linked her with a therapist who she connected with right away. And over the time that she consulted us, she learned how to trust and listen to herself more and to communicate better about her own limitations and boundaries to others. When she left, she said, "I'm ready to try flying on my own." So I did a rough little estimate this week, and by my estimation, when you combine the monetary gifts of this community through annual collection and the money you raise through the Riverwalk and the individual donations, your generosity throughout the year, this faith community accounts for more than a third of our annual budget. Can you just clap for yourselves, please? I mean, that's huge. And that doesn't even count all the other ways that you contribute, in-kind gifts and your prayer and your your volunteer hours, the many, many volunteer hours and all that expertise. You play a crucial role in making this healing work possible. And because of you, this last year we were able to serve over 300 people, and that represents 3,000 therapeutic encounters. So I just want to thank you for your investment in the lives of the people who consult us. They often speak of how amazing it is to them that they can get the kind of support that they get at no cost. You are all a part of sharing God's abundant, unconditional love, and it's an honor to be serving with you. Thank you.